Good morning. Buenos dias y bienvenidos a todos. Welcome to the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. I'm Beverly Donahue, your lay leader today. We wish to extend special hospitality to those of you who are guests with us today. If you'd like to learn more about our church, please visit the table, the welcome table in the foyer. We are an intentionally inclusive congregation, and so we welcome everyone to our church. Please join with me in affirming our new mission statement, which is printed in your order of service and beautifully displayed on our wall. At First UU Church of Austin, we gather in community to nourish souls, transform lives, and do justice.
Who loves this church? Raise your hand. Wow. Man. Encore is right. You know, over the years, I have observed people as they've come into a congregation and sometimes left a congregation, inquired about a congregation, made calls about it, talked to me about it, wondered about it. And I've formed in my mind a new way of thinking about what people do when they come to a church. It's changed a lot over the years. But I've sort of arrived at an opinion about what is going on when a person comes to a church and stays at a church and lingers at a church. And what is fueling the heart of anyone who is a part of a congregation. I think that every person who comes into the orbit of a congregation like this, or any religious affiliation, has certain questions that are driving them. They may not be able to articulate these questions. They may not consciously be aware of them, but they are operating in them. One of the questions is there love in this world? Is there love in this world? And by love, what is really meant is acceptance. Is there a place where I, in my individuality, can be accepted? I'm a little different than other people. I have certain things about my life, my history, my person. I haven't always felt accepted. Is there a place where there is love, there is acceptance? That's one of the questions nobody will say out loud, but it is operating. Another question is there hope? I read the news. I see what's going on in the world. It's not always good. Is there hope in the world? Is there hope for myself, my family, my spouse? Is there hope for the human race? Is there hope? Is there anywhere a group of people who are aspiring to a better world and seem to know the direction that lies in? Another question that is powerful in the minds of many is, can I trust other people? I have been violated. I have been mistreated, maybe by religious authorities, maybe by religion itself. Maybe the culture of capitalism has felt like I am a commodity and nothing else. Can I trust people? Can I really open my heart to other human beings? And they will not betray me. Is there a pattern of meaning in this world? Is there something bigger than myself, bigger than my family, that I can perhaps be a part of, I can fit into, something that is not just narcissistic projection or something made up or imaginary, but is there some real pattern at work in the world for greater meaning and hope and love that I can be a part of? And can my family be a part of it? Can my children grow up into a way of living that puts them in touch with that pattern? These are some of the things that move people, that are inarticulated, that are silent, but powerful. So we need to begin to think, who are we? What are we? What kind of community are we that we can contain the sacred energy, the sacred hopes and yearnings of people, not only ourselves, but all who come here? You read the newspapers. You know there's a lot of dark things in the world. It frightens people. Do we, in our individuality, in our collective energy, do we provide a vessel which can receive people and honor that sacred trust that is extended to us, the hope that is extended to us? Can we honor that? We are all engaged in a sacred mission, each of us. A minister, as Kay was so eloquently saying, I wouldn't be that hard on ministers, but all of us are ministers in this work of being a sacred place that honors the needs of people who darken the door of this place. At the core of what we provide, the Unitarian Universalist vision of a religious community, it is a distinct vision and mission, is the aim and the hope of principle and vision-centered living, the hope that human beings can rise above the swirling emotionality of life, the prejudices, the chaos, and can orient life individually and collectively by the coordinates of a truth that is greater than ourselves. These principles, by common agreement, are expressions of wisdom as they have come down to us, and we express them, as in our seven principles, in ways that are an interpretation of the wisdom of the past as we understand it in the now. Not something that is in concrete and is forever. It is malleable, but it is a truth that can help us orient in the present as we move to the future. These principles, such as our seven principles, are products of reflection, but they are grounded in and dependent upon that which is innate in us. We occasionally see revelations of what is innate in us. Such was a glimpse that many of us had and that was on display this week when it seemed like everyone in the world was looking at the fate of 33 miners in Chile, trapped below the earth for a very long time. And I just happened to be at a Chinese restaurant when the last man arose from the mines. And I was at a counter buying a Chinese takeout from a Vietnamese man who was behind the counter. And he just glowed with delight as he pointed to a television that was nearby and he said, "Look, look, the last man has come out of the earth." And he was so ebullient with joy that he began to tell me his life story, that he had come here 17 years ago from Vietnam, and that he loved this country and he had made a new life. And on he went, out of the bubbling enthusiasm of his joy, his vicarious joy. This is an example of that innate compassion and that innate love of life and desire to rejoice and that desire to be happy and to celebrate that is in each of us and is so often repressed. And it is the rough material, if you will, of this natural goodness that is the material, the source from which our principles work to help us focus on and prioritize and give clarity and direction to our most life-affirming principles. For we embrace principles not out of any abstract reason, but because they serve life, because they renew life. It is not easy, however, to be guided by principles in a sustained manner, even when those principles are clear and incisive. It is difficult for we human beings to be confident enough within ourselves to say, yes, there is some truth in the world that is worthy of my devotion. It is difficult to overcome peer pressure, inertia, groupthink, self-doubt of all kinds. It is difficult to stand with principles and to stay steady in their honor in the face of instinct, sheer emotionality, and repressive belief systems. My family provides ample demonstration of the difficulties of principles. My daughter, Allie and Lily, came home from school one day and they were just really bubbling with excitement. And they said, oh, our principal, during the big gathering of all the classes, our principal, Linda Fisher, told us the most wonderful story. I said, oh, really, what's that? And then they said, well, it was about how everybody is, you need to imagine everybody has a bucket. Everybody, everywhere, all the time, is carrying a bucket, an invisible bucket. And what our job is to try to fill up their bucket with good things and not bad things. Daddy, don't you think that's a great idea? I said, yeah, I think that's a great idea. Great idea. So the next time they got into an argument, I asked the question, are you filling up each other's bucket? And they stopped. Looked down. And one of them said no. And they changed their behavior. Next argument. Went that long beyond this first argument. Next argument. I didn't say a word, but I just want to ask a question. Do you think you're filling up each other's bucket? They stopped. Looked a little irritated. Looked around. Changed their behavior. Entered the paradise of family bliss and concord. Next day. Now, I know your children never get into arguments, but mine occasionally do. So next day, or whenever it was, the next argument, I said, nothing but, are you filling up each other's bucket? And Lily said, Dad, you've already said that. We know that. And proceeded to be in a conflict. And then a week or so after that, same thing happened. I said, are you filling up each other's bucket? And one of them said, Dad, don't ever say that again. You see, we can admire a principle at a distance. We can admire this vision statement so beautifully written on the wall. We can admire the truthfulness of the principles of our religious movement. But when it comes to integrating them into our lives, it proves more challenging, and we can easily go into the attack, denial, and disdain mode. You know, if just one city started actually practicing just our first principle, honoring the worth and dignity of all persons, that in itself would transform the world, I think. There's a human tendency to just admire and disdain principles, even though they represent our best, most life-serving purposes. But there is yet another level of difficulty. We do not have these principles forced on us by a transcendent power, although certainly it is wonderful if people believe in God or Goddess or some transcendent power. We do not have our principles forced on us by a transcendent power, or by a charismatic leader, or by authority. I remember years ago, I had a good friend who one day showed up at one of our meetings, and he just declared that he had joined an authoritarian religion. From my perspective, I won't name which one it is. I like to respect and honor all religious faiths. But it was a religion that many of us would think of as very repressive. This was a guy I had known for quite some time, and I was amazed. And it occurred to me that one day he just decided that his life would be easier if he relented and gave himself up to this very strict, confining religion. That is not the way that we here proceed. But yet there is another challenge. Many of us are coming here with residues of individual and collective negative experiences of religion. We are, many of us, religious refugees. And out of that experience, we sometimes think there is nothing for us to believe. There's nothing for us to follow. That is a half-truth, I believe. We've walked away from other religious traditions because of their limitations, but for the purpose of creating a yet more alive, yet more life-honoring religious faith, not in nullifying anything and everything that would give a greater meaning to our lives. It seems at times as though our whole culture is in a destructive mode. The Tea Party movement is but one sign of that. There is so much anger out there and negativity out there. It is difficult to seek to be and to be faithful to being positive. The seven principles of the religious movement called the Unitarian Universalist provide wide boundaries within which individual congregations can create their own mission and visions and goals. Very briefly, I'd like to mention one of these, the second one, which I will talk about later more exhaustively. It is this principle of honoring justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. I am very deeply struck by the complementary nature of this principle. Justice suggests that there are boundaries around which what is and is not acceptable must be honored, and that a person in community cannot violate these boundaries and remain in community. Equity, the second part of the principle, suggests that everyone is equal and evokes the value of fairness and objectivity. Compassion, in contrast, is a very different way of relating and calculating our role in relationships. It does not operate with reference to justice. It is not even really guided by fairness. Compassion is a kind of limitless, no questions asked, no judgments rendered way of relating with loving intent and with a heart full of mercy. It sees negative behavior from a perspective that is quite different from justice. Our second principle suggests that all three qualities, justice, equity, and compassion, are needed in our relationships. I find this intriguing because after decades of being involved in religious communities, I believe it strikes the right balance of what communities need to help people be guided within their context. In another sermon, I will elaborate further on this principle, but I wanted to at least give a brief introduction today. In closing, I would like to share something with you. This congregation is on a big journey. Part of this journey is finding a settled minister. Many people are working very hard to make sure that process is successful. I too believe that process is very important. But I encourage you, each of you, to think about this situation from a different angle. Everyone is asking the question, who will our next settled minister be? I would encourage you to realize that you who are sitting in the pews, are the settled ministry of this church. One of the important areas that needs to be looked at, I believe, is the sense of spirituality that is present in your congregation. About 8 years ago, a man named Christian Schwartz, a church consultant in Germany, surveyed 1,000 churches in 32 countries and 6 continents. In the end, nearly 1.2 million people responded to his surveys. And from this, Schwartz came up with 8 qualities of vital congregations. I'll speak much more about that later, in later sermons. But one of those characteristics is what Schwartz called passionate spirituality. Healthy churches are passionate about their spirituality and are leading committed lives and practicing their faith with enthusiasm. People know what they believe, why they believe it, and it deeply affects their everyday lives. People who come within the orbit of those congregations immediately sense that this group of people is engaged in a principle, values, and mission-driven existence. This might seem challenging, particularly for UUs, but wait a minute. I have another perspective. I believe Unitarian Universalists have the greatest capacity and hunger for spirituality of any religious group I have ever known or worked with. This is because, to a large extent, members of this religious movement have gone beyond the conventional way of thinking about religion and are open to something else, something higher, something more mature. I think that a deeper appreciation of our UU principles is a very good starting point for such a movement into a deeper spirituality. As you navigate this transition, I hope that you, each of you, can be mindful of the opportunities for recreating and redefining yourselves. I hope each of you can understand that you are the settled ministry of this congregation. I hope that each of you have a role to play in helping this place be the kind of community which honors the sacred trust of having people in a community who are looking for hope, who are looking for acceptance, who are looking for love, who are looking for trust, who are looking for meaning and for their place in it. I look forward to walking on this journey with you as you find your pathway into the future.
This is a presentation of the First Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin. For more information, visit our website at www.austinuu.org.